No. Never.
Bhajati. Accept.
Kumanichinam.
Of persons with a dirty heart.
Saha. He. Ijyam.
Offering.
Hari.
The Supreme Lord.
Adana.
To those who have no material possessions.
Atmadanam.
Simply dependent on the Lord.
Priya.
Who is dear.
Rasagya.
Who accepts the essence of life.
Shruta.
Education.
Dana.
Wealth.
Kula.
Aristocracy.
Karmanam.
And of fruitive activities.
Madai.
By pride.
Ye.
All those who.
Vidadhati.
Perform.
Papam.
Disgrace.
Akinchaneshu.
Without material possessions.
Satsu.
Unto the devotees. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is dependent on His pure devotees. He does not even accept the offerings of those who are not devotees. A pure devotee is one who feels he does not possess anything material. A devotee is always happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Devotees may sometimes appear materially poor, but because they are spiritually advanced and enriched, they are most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotees are free from attachment to family, society, friendship, children, and so on. They abandon affection for all these material possessions and are always happy in possessing the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead understands the position of His devotee. If a person derides a pure devotee, he is never recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, the Supreme Lord never excuses one who offends a pure devotee. There are many examples of this in history. A great mystic yogi, Durvasa Muni, offended the great devotee, Ambarish Maharaj. The great sage Durvasa was to be chastised by the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord. Even though the great mystic directly approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was never excused. Those on the path of liberation should be very careful not to offend a pure devotee. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjanan Shalashakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnu Praya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shnevari Paschati Adeshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Nabajati Kumanishi Nam Saijiam Harir Adyatma Adaanat Madhya Dana Priyora Sajya Shruttadana kula karmanam madairyevi dadati papam akinchaneshu satsum. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with the material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. So in this verse, Narada Muni instructs the Prachetas. He gives them basically the formula of how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We understand the essence of spiritual life and the meaning of bhakti itself is to please the Supreme Person, to please Krishna. That's the whole and sole purpose of actually everyone, or it should be, of everyone's existence. It's not, of course, of everyone, but it should be. That we please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now, whenever we have our own conception of how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we actually should be 100% sure that it might not be so. That the way we think to please Supreme Personality of Godhead is according to some kind of our material or even some kind of concocted spiritual, so-called spiritual conception. So in the scriptures, those who are close to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who have understanding of what the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants, those information have been given to us so that we also have an opportunity to please Him in a such a way that actually will definitely benefit everyone, and it will definitely benefit us ourselves as well. So how to please the Supreme Person? It's not by some kind of conditioning by particular environment, circumstances, or particular tradition. It's not. We have to hear from the authority. And that authorities are the devotees of the Lord Himself. Because they have experience, they know how to do it. Because we directly don't have access basically to the Supreme Person. And we might not really, and we actually don't know what maybe He likes, what maybe He prefers. We only, in general, only project our own likings upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that very often might be a mistake. So we shouldn't project anything. Like we know when people project some particular their own conditioning upon the Supreme Person, when they even don't know who that Supreme Person is, then they come up with various kinds of what is known as idol worship. So they concoct the form of the Lord, they concoct the qualities of the Lord, they don't even know what to speak of concocting, pastimes of the Lord, or the name of the Lord itself. They'll invent various kinds of mantras and processes how to reach the Lord, so-called Lord again. So it's all mental speculation. So that is something that we have to be very much aware of and beware of, and therefore we always accept, and this is the process, ultimate process, the path from those who walk on the path and who know the path, and those are the pure devotees of the Lord. So here Narada Muni, who is such kind of exalted personality, who is one of the Mahajans, he instructs the Pracharas what actually Supreme Personality likes and what we should offer to Him. What should be our aim in our devotional service? He said that the Supreme Lord is very dear to those devotees who don't have material possessions but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. So materially, we don't have to possess anything. Of course, very often, again, there is another misconception that people, especially in the West, have. And that is that, you know, wealth is bad. We shouldn't have any kind of wealth. And that actually only those people who are poor, they can inherit the kingdom of the God. This is another kind of misconception. And then anybody who is wealthy, that he are automatically just disqualified because they possess some kind of opulence. So that is misconception. Because it's not necessary by anything material, as we're going to discuss today a little more further. It's not necessary by anything material, or having it or not having it, that is automatically a qualification to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or actually to achieve the ultimate perfection of life, and that is love of God. So there is nothing material that can qualify us. Or actually even disqualify us. That is called Yukta Vairagya. So it's not by anything possessing or not possessing, but it's by our attitude. Srila Prabhupada would say, the advancement in spiritual life depends on the attitude of a follower. So what is that attitude? It's given here as a some kind of as an indicator, basically, that we should please, we should be always ready to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, since we can't do that very often directly, therefore we try to do that through his representative, who is a spiritual master or any kind of authority that represents him. So this is the process, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna will be definitely pleased if we have such kind of wonderful opportunity, if we appreciate that kind of opportunity to render that particular kind of service that has been given to us. Very often we discriminate about various kinds of services on a neophyte platform. But this is not necessary. Actually, it's very much unwanted in the spiritual life. Because any kind of service, it just doesn't matter what kind of it is, if it is meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as it is stated here, it's going to please the Supreme Person. So this is the real wealth, the real opulence of a devotee to possess opportunity to render devotional service. If we don't please, if we don't actually appreciate any kind of service that we have been offered, that Krishna is offering to us through some kind of authority, then actually we'll be deprived of any kind of service to Krishna. It's not just, hey, I want to do something that I really like only. Well, after some time, we won't do anything at all. Because if we don't get any opportunity for any kind of service, then we'll just go out of the, say, association of the devotees, and then we'll start doing all different kinds of things that we might like to do. Whatever our mind tells us that we are supposed to do. So we'll be bereft of that wonderful opportunity of render devotional service. So devotional service means to accept whatever Supreme Personality of Godhead is offering to us, as I said, through some kind of an authority. And if we surrender, that's the most wonderful thing. Even if we don't like something, after some time, Krishna will give us the nectar of that service, that wonderful dealing that we can exchange, that basically translates that our expression of love towards Him. And we will relish the nectar of any kind of service. What kind of service, it just doesn't matter. If you do any kind of service with that mood that, hey, I'm doing this because I want to please Krishna, because that's something that I've been told to do, that is going to please the Krishna, and then we'll relish the nectar of that particular devotional service as well, no matter whether initially we like it or don't. Because spiritual life means doing things, something that ordinarily we would have never done, but we surrender and we do it for Krishna. That is spiritual life. And something that we would always do, but very often we renounce that for the pleasure of Krishna. We don't do that kind of thing. This is the spiritual life. So renouncing something that actually we are having difficulty renouncing for pleasure of Krishna, and doing something that ordinarily we wouldn't do, but we do it for pleasure of Krishna. So this is the beauty, and this is the process of devotional service. And this is something that Krishna is... that Narada Muni is stating here, this is something that is the most pleasing to Krishna himself. Is that wealth to have the opportunity to render any kind of devotional service, no matter what it is. This is something that is pleasing to Krishna. Krishna doesn't consider any kind of other kind of opulence or quality here. He just considers that attitude of devotional service. And as it is stated here, indeed the Lord relishes devotional activities of such devotees. Because that's the having a proper attitude towards any kind of service, this is something that Krishna is relishing. Krishna is not relishing as I said, anything material, because after all, what can we offer to Him? Everything belongs to Him, nothing belongs to us. So there's nothing to relish for Him, what He already possesses. But He doesn't have that love of His devotee, or any one of us. We are all His devotees, no matter at which stage, or considering everybody outside of the devotional circle. Everybody is Krishna's devotee. And Krishna is just waiting to receive basically their attention as well. Because they, and that's the only thing He's looking for. He's not looking for anything else, because everything else actually belongs to Him anyway. It is some kind of transformation of His energies. Everything belongs to Him. So the only need that He has is that love, is that devotion. And that's the only thing actually that we need as well. We also don't need anything else. We just need that to wake up, that dormant propensity that exists within us ourselves. So that is the process of devotional service. And this is something that the Lord, and we also are, or should be at least, interested in. At least we should understand that that is something that is ultimate goal of life. We don't need anything. When you're fully satisfied in devotional service, you don't actually really require anything else. And this has been shown by various devotees through the and acharyas in the past. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, just by dint of devotional service and association with the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they left everything. All the wealth, all the possessions, everything. They didn't require anything. Except that they were fully satisfied, absolutely fully satisfied with pure devotional service of the Lord. They didn't have any kind of other requirements. So it is stated that those who are puffed up with the material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they very often deride the devotees. So all kinds of different kinds of material possessions can be very, very dangerous. Here, interestingly, the word madai, which in Sanskrit basically, as far as I know, means madness. Mada means madness, right? So here it's translated as the pride. Srila Prabhupada is translating. So pride is a kind of a madness. It's the, maybe you may say, sum total of all the madness. That's what the pride is. And people who do possess some kind of material opulence, they tend to become a proud. They tend to become very proud. And that pride is actually very destructive for the devotional service. We have seen, of course, unfortunately, or fortunately for our own, and we have also, I mean, there's so many personal examples of how pride actually can be very, very destructive on the path of devotional progress. In the incident of Sudama Brahmana, when he came to Dwaraka urged by his wife to gain some wealth, to receive something for Krishna, he of course wasn't considering it seriously. He wasn't really basically intent to gain anything from Krishna. He agreed just using this particular opportunity as a pretext to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he, by the nature being a Brahmana, he was very renounced, and he didn't want anything. He didn't want any such kind of material thing. He understood, as naturally devotees are averse to anything material. They're averse to material world. They don't require anything. So when Sudama Brahmana came to Dwaraka and he met Krishna and had his darshan and finally returned back home, seeing the palace upon the place upon which earlier was some kind of a small hut existing, he was actually shocked. He actually thought that actually I didn't receive Krishna's mercy. He's very actually disappointed, because he thought that I'm unworthy of receiving the highest, the most valuable gift that Krishna can offer to anyone, and that is devotional service. Why he thought like this? Because he saw all that opulences. He saw the opulence that was, and servants and everything that accompanied all that kind of opulence, that was even greater, that it is explained that what even Lord Brahma has. So when he encountered that, so to say, he was very, very disappointed, because he thought, I'm so fallen, I'm so unworthy. Krishna has not given me the most valuable thing. This is the pure devotional service. He has given me all these things actually that are very, very destructive. Material wealth and everything. That is so destructive actually for devotional life. But he had again some misconception. Jiva Goswami explains in this purport that there was some... Krishna actually, by giving him everything, he wanted to remove that small tinge of a subtle pride that Sudama Brahmana had. And that pride was that actually he was thinking that I am very renounced and I am a Brahmana. And I can't deal with all of these kinds of opulences. He thought, I'm not like Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, he's such an exalted devotee. He can deal with all these kinds of opulences. But I'm not qualified as such. But still he was thinking that he is kind of renounced and a Brahmana. There was some subtle tinge of pride. So Krishna wanted to remove that as well. So by giving him opulences and making him understand actually that Yuktam Vairagya Muchate, actually everything can be utilized and should be utilized in Krishna's services. That we shouldn't be averse to any kind of energy, because ultimately anything connected to Krishna is as good as Krishna itself. Or at least we should find a means, or there is a means that it can be engaged in a Krishna service. So that was the lesson actually, that was the final thing that Sudama Brahmana ultimately understood and received from Krishna, and that was something that was the most essential, to remove any kind of tinge, any kind of pride that we might be having in the devotional life. Krishna is always working on us. Whatever is still existing within our dirty heart, Krishna knows the means how to remove it. And he will always try to work on it as much as possible, try to chisel and chisel and chisel and clean until the point we really become pure and eligible for receiving that pure devotional service, the most valuable gift. So pride, we know, as it is mentioned here, can be very, very, very detrimental for devotional service, because it leads us to various kinds of offenses as well. May commit various kinds of offenses towards the devotees. As an interesting pastime that took place, of course, not related to the offenses, but during the Mahabharata war, it's just the example of a pride itself. When Dronacharya, when the battle was going on and Dronacharya had been killed by Drishtadyumna, and then Ashwatthama, hearing that his father is dead, he became so enraged, was tremendously enraged. And he possessed actually the most destructive weapon that was even more powerful than Pashupata weapon, or even more powerful than the Brahmastra itself. It was called Narayan weapon. So he released that Narayan weapon. And that Narayan weapon had the potency to practically consume all the Pandava's force, all the Pandava's army. But of course, since Krishna was on the other side, Krishna understood what is going on, and he knew what the Narayan weapon is. So he ordered everyone to lie down. To lie down and not to move, because Narayan weapon was specially designed to act against the Kshatriyas. To act against those who hold the weapons and who have that fighting spirit. So Narayan weapon, as it was approaching, and everybody else lie down and drop down their weapons, but only Bhima was resisting. Even Arjuna, who vowed that he will never put his bow down, he only said, I will put my bow down while fighting, if I've been killed. Now while fighting and killing the enemies, only at that time my bow will... I will let my bow drop on the ground. or if I do the worship, only in those circumstances I will put my bow down. Then Arjuna was submissive somehow or other at that point. He listened to the Krishna. But Bhima wouldn't listen at all. Bhima wasn't ready. And then the whole glow of that particular weapon was on top of Bhima. It was about to be completely destroyed. And then everybody pulled him down and snatched his weapons and threw it aside. And somehow or other they subdued it. Because Bhima is a kshatriya. He had that kshatriya spirit of not surrendering. He would have never surrendered. And he didn't listen to Krishna. But somehow or other they pulled him down. And then the Narayan weapon was subsisted. It was subdued actually. By such kind of humble attitude. So and then somehow or other even Ashwatthama, he was pleased to some degree. He didn't destroy the Pandava army. That weapon didn't destroy. But somehow or other he was pleased that everybody became submissive to the weapon that he had possessed. So here we see it's very instructive how actually how humbleness, humility actually is the most powerful weapon. It's the most powerful weapon. Being pride doesn't really exemplify any kind of greatness at all. It's just most maddened actually as it described here, quality that can exist. It's a disqualification. There's no question of quality actually. It's a disquality. Disqualification kind of. Because very often that is the case with all of us, that we tend to be proud about anything. As the saying goes, even the pauper is proud of his penny. So we may possess anything minute, but we might become proud of that particular possession itself. Like a glowworm. Glowworm is very proud that during the night he can enlighten, or the firefly, whichever. Or it's the same thing, just with different... that it can, you know, during the night, it shines so nicely and emits the light. So it's so proud. But actually, during the daytime, nobody knows that it even exists. It is so insignificant. So similarly, when we are in the darkness, we are proud of any our so-called ability, so-called any kind of material qualification, we become very proud. But actually, when we are in that darkness of ignorance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we don't actually realize how insignificant we are. It's so insignificant. So how to become submissive, how to become humble, this is the essence actually of the spiritual practice. And this is something that actually Narada Muni is pointing out here as well. When Ramanujacharya invited one of his gurus, Ramanujacharya had five gurus, and one of them was Kanchipurna, who was like basically a Shudra by birth, but he was very, very exalted devotee of the Lord. And once Ramanujacharya invited him for a lunch, and while Kanchipurna was sitting, Ramanujacharya started massaging his legs and his feet. And then Kanchipurna was drawn back. He said, "Please don't do this. You're a Brahmana and you're such a learned scholar. Such an aristocratic person actually. And I'm such a low-born person. I'm a Shudra. Please don't do this." And then Ramanujacharya pleaded, "No. Please allow me to do that service. If being a Brahmana and being a learned is something that doesn't allow me to perform service to the exalted devotees of the Lord, then I consider myself to be the most condemned, the most unfortunate person." So then Kanchipurna was so pleased with the humility of Ramanujacharya. So nothing external basically is there that will qualify us for anything, especially definitely not for the devotional service, if we consider this to be the greatness on itself. Like here it is stated that people who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, fruitive activities, they're so proud of possessing material things, and they very often deride the devotees. So this is something that we become proud and we think somebody else to be less just because he doesn't have something maybe that we have, that we possess. So that kind of pride is very prominent in the material society. Pride is very prominent. You know, Prabhupada also, he wasn't very much impressed by the wealthy people who would say, give some kind of a donation. Prabhupada said that actually, it's not what you give to Krishna, but what you're holding back. It's not how much you give. It's how much you're, you know, keeping behind. This is what should be looked for. So devotees, they don't keep anything behind. They're ready to surrender absolutely everything, even their own lives, for sake of Krishna. This is the greatness of the devotee. Very often there is that tendency that people come and they sponsor something. And even devotees sometimes, those who are neophyte, may sometimes find they give a lot of donation, but they can think they can basically influence some kind of services or some kind of managerial affairs in the temple. And they consider that to be their right to do so because they're giving donations and they're looking for some prestige, for some recognition. It's not that, you know, we are saying that somebody shouldn't be recognized for their service, whichever they're doing. Not from that point of view. But that sometimes it tends to turn into the extreme. That kind of donors, you know, they tend to control everything. Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was shouting at one of such donors. He said, you can't buy me. You can't purchase me by your donations. What do you think? You can purchase me? So, in the case we are ever giving something to Krishna, and we shouldn't think that we have purchased Krishna, or we have purchased somebody who acts on the behalf of Krishna. We should understand that actually we should give up everything because everything belongs to Krishna. There is that famous story of a thief and Prabhupada was walking on a long building. He was taking manufactured things. But everything comes from Krishna. Nothing belongs to us. And we shouldn't be proud of possessing something and thinking, hey, we are giving something away. And then that we can manipulate control through whatever whimsical ideas of spiritual life we have. So this is the misunderstanding, this is the misconception that we and many actually are having or might be having. And it's something that is distracting on the path of spiritual life. Another thing is education. Nowadays, if you see, it is such a great business actually. Or just the consideration of somebody having a lot of money. Nowadays in the West, nobody considers any kind of qualities, any kind of values. That doesn't count at all. The person is actually valued or revered by the amount of money he possesses. That's all. It doesn't matter who he is, what he's doing, how he's acquiring that money, what he's doing with that money. It just doesn't matter. So that's the unfortunate state of the Kali Yuga. It doesn't matter whether a person, you know, has a good qualities or not. If he's devotional, religious, pious, it just doesn't matter. So this has become a criteria basically through which people are judging each other just based on the amount of money somebody possesses. Or education. Education, nowadays in India, of course, as I said, that's another thing. It's another kind of prestige, of course, which again, and from another point of view, comes along with money. Because if you want to be educated, you need a lot of money. You have to pay a lot for the tuitions, for everything else, for all the fees that are required. And that's something that is considered prestigious. And then somebody who gains some kind of degree considers that to be the utmost things. And comparing himself to others, that's another kind of caste system. The system itself, caste system, is the perverted reflection of a Varnashram system, which is natural according to our qualities. But when it becomes perverted, it becomes caste system. That means somebody who is holding some particular kind of position, that actually he is misusing that particular kind of position. So that's what caste system is. So nowadays, even in our society, basically that's another kind of caste system. Somebody holding some kind of a degree considers himself to be the most qualified compared to somebody who doesn't. That's the only criteria. That's the only, basically, consideration that exists. So that's something that is very, especially in terms of devotional life and devotional service, that is not considered here by Lord Krishna himself. Like, again, talking about the pride, example of Keshav Kashmiri. He was so proud by his knowledge. But he was so easily conquered, defeated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just because he was proud. And of course, he was granted a lot of mercy ultimately because he was a devotee of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or another Brahmana, when he came, he was so proud of his austerity. As one Brahmana in Navadvip, he heard of the kirtan taking place at the Shriva's house and he desperately wanted to join. But he wasn't allowed because he wasn't qualified. But he thought he was qualified just because he was taking a glass of milk once a day. That was his austerity, and he thought this is something that qualifies me to be a great devotee and join that kirtan. And then he was so angry, then the next day when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was shouting at him, demanding, you have to let me enter that particular kirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, just by drinking a little milk, it's not a qualification to get the most precious thing of life, to gain the devotional service. And then that Brahmana became angry, he took his thread and he cursed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, I'm cursing you to become bereft of all material opulences. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, thank you very much, Hari Bol. So this is what pride does. We become proud. And then we lose the association of the devotees, we lose the association actually of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he is not impressed by anything material, any kind of opulence. We know that Duryodhana, he had everything. He had invited Lord for a big feast. And he made wonderful arrangements for his staying. But the Lord never went to Duryodhana's place. Instead he went to the Vidura's place, where he even ate the banana peels from his wife. He considered the devotion. He didn't consider anything material. Ultimately, what do we possess? We don't possess anything. Everything belongs to Krishna. Only thing that we possess is that devotion and love that we can have towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is something that is described here by Narada Muni to the Prachetas, that actually only devotional service actually the Lord is relishing. And devotees who don't have anything but possess and value that devotional service are the most dear to Him. The most dear. And of course, if we even possess something, we should understand, like in case of Sudama Brahmana, that Krishna had given us that particular opulence to use it in His service. And we should be detached from that. It's not that we shouldn't utilize it, we should utilize it, but we should become detached from that. And simultaneously, definitely, we should be very careful not to offend anybody, just on account of possessing something, just on account of that Krishna had given us something to us. Some kind of position, some kind of opulence. You know, like we see a lot of times Lord Indra somehow or other he gets bewildered by the position, commits a lot of offenses towards devotees, towards his spiritual master, Brihaspati, towards Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni here, sometimes he does that, like it is mentioned in the purport here, he did that in a case in relationship to Ambarish Maharaj. So we have to be careful not to become bewildered by any opulence. We should know, even if we receive something for Krishna, it should be used for Krishna Himself. And that is the perfection of devotional life. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, please. Mixed devotion. Well, that's what it stated. The demigods have a lot of mixed devotion. I mean, they're karma mishra bhakta. So there is an always opportunity to advance further and get purified. Ultimately, such kind of a devotee will realize that it's vishaya, karma and jnana, any kind of other thing, it's not so beneficial or suitable for pure devotional service. I mean, they will get that realization and ultimately they can advance as well towards that particular point. What? Well, there's no... if somebody has a devotion towards demigods, fine. In a sense that we accept them as our gurus. Or the guides towards Krishna himself. It just depends on motivation. After, if you understand that there are someone who can also help us to reach Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is nothing wrong with that. And that becomes purified in that sense and becomes even pure devotional service. We can have devotion and be grateful for their, you know, guidelines towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything in the course of time, as long as we stick to any kind of devotional service, will purify us. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.